Another election is behind us, and another administration has arrived. Today, we're going to break it all down. I'm Kevin Fever, and this is The Weekly. Today, for our return episode, I was joined by three representatives of the three bodies that were contested in the November elections. President Sandoval, Representative and Presumptive Speaker Rose, and Senator Josh have all been on the podcast before. But it was a real pleasure to have them all in at once to break down the results and what it might mean for each of the chambers that they're a part of and for the American people for the next couple of months. Without further ado, President Sandoval, Representative Rose, and Senator Josh.
All right, two special guests today. President Sandoval, welcome back to The Weekly.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
And Congresswoman Rose, same to you.
Thank you.
All right, well, that was better. We're on take two here. We've got, I am freshly back home in the garage studio. You two are safely at home. recording here just a few hours after I took off. We're at 9:15 Eastern on Monday. Not that I super think that matters, but it's a fresh administration. It's a fresh term. And as per usual, we're just going to kind of run through the somewhat surprising results of the November election and how it might kind of affect both of you and your chambers. So to avoid what happened with order last time we did a results show, I'm just going to kind of start rattling things off, and then we can do some commentary as we go. If we want to sit here and chat at the end, I'm here for that. But we got to get the results through first. Everybody good?
Yes.
All right. Fair.
Fantastic. All right. Let's talk north. Obviously, this wasn't an incredibly interesting story. We had a left sweep in the House, which is relatively expected. There were no close races. Half of the races went uncontested. The only thing that was even borderline close was in District 3 between Bob DeBoy and former President Polk, who has an interesting legacy that he was not quite standing on, but Bob DeBoy won that one out. Otherwise, Joey went down from Senate to the House, Martin Walks returns, Juan Escobar Mendoza takes a seat, Arkenstone and Viper Darius both maintain their seats. I guess, any immediate reactions to the House stuff?
I'll speak on that first, just because it's the House. Sorry, President Sandoval. I do think that the race between Polk and Bob DeBoy was a lot closer than I initially expected it to be, if only because of the former president's history. Mm-hmm. But other than that, the races that really struck me as like a show of strength was Martin Walks race. His ability to keep on pushing, even if there wasn't a whole lot of actual debate from his opponent, he did still make a good show of himself. I thought that was good.
For sure, yeah. It's pretty common that you see those if one of the candidates kind of no-shows through the campaign, you see the other one disappear.
Mm-hmm.
But it was nice to kind of have it turn into an almost town hall setting where he's still letting himself be held accountable, being open to the constituents. That's always nice to see. Sandoval, anything chip in?
With the North, I mean, you saw three races there go uncontested, and an SCP sweep is, or a left-wing sweep is not surprising to me.
Sure. I guess we can get to most definitely the three most interesting races up in the state, some more shocking than others, that being Howard Elkridge taking out, Howard Elkridge beating out Stebb for the Senate Class 1 seat, a very close race just outside of recount range, and former President Loder beating out Justice Amir for the Senate Class 2 race there by a much bigger margin. And then, of course, the big surprise of the night, which I don't believe a single one of the news organizations predicted, was you and Vice President Beau actually taking the state, which was stunning. I don't think it was on anyone's radar. I don't know if it was stunning for you and your camp. I was not intimately involved in the campaign, but I think we were I was expecting just a couple of electors out of that, certainly not winning the state.
Yeah, our internal polling really pointed to two or three electors out of the North. And you saw last election, you saw Jack Coulter, who was the lieutenant governor of the North. And, you know, I have no connection to the North. I've been all Dixie all the time. And so he only got two electoral votes out of the North. And I was expecting and polling around the same. And so when I pulled away with a majority, when I even saw in the beginning of watching the result that we were even somewhat even, that's when I knew I had won the election.
Mm-hmm. Just pause you here, because Senator Joash has decided to cut in a little bit late here. We had some connection issues trying to get things started. Welcome, Senator.
Thank you for having me. Pleasure to be here.
Your clearance, because you know you're speaking with the president here.
Oh, yes, I made sure to check ahead.
Great, thanks.
That didn't go to your head quick at all. Anyway, we're just finishing up going through the North results here, talking through the presidential. Any reaction to that or anything else in the North?
I'll speak to the presidential race if you're interested. I was actually, the margin there, if I remember correctly, it was about a 3% margin in the popular vote, which was just like way closer than I thought was even possible in the North with how strong the left is there, specifically the SCP. But I think it was really the campaign that pulled it out for Sandoval, President-elect Sandoval. The campaign that they had there was very strong, and I think there was already some support for him there. I can't speak to that. I really only know about Jefferson as far as, you know, the Sandoval support, but I think that was part of how he could pull it out in the North, was the strong campaign and maybe some of the foothold that he had with the left.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was clear from previous, really the Coulter race, that libertarians have the ability to win statewide. I think what this result shows that they're lacking is really strong membership. The right put up three House candidates, really none of which decided to show up. So I think it's pretty clear that if the right wing decided to play on that ground, there is room to work there. You just need to really build up that campaign infrastructure to give themselves a chance.
Yeah, I agree. And just speaking to the Senate races, you know, as vice chair of the Libertarians, I think that we were the only ones who had faith in those races.
Mm-hmm.
And I predicted that both Elkridge and Loder would win the races because both good candidates, both have strong histories in the North, both are great debaters and campaigners. So I think a lot of people were surprised, but on the libertarian side, there really was not as much shock.
Yeah. Former President Loder definitely has, and now Senator, a fair bit of baggage to his name that we see get drug out every single time he runs for anything. But with Justice Amir's announcement that she will no longer be running any campaigns from the bench, which she did in her last two races, I think it's pretty clear that that was detrimental to the left's shot at blocking that seat. I'm not sure that he would have prevailed over someone without that hanging over their head, but I suppose the right wing will take it no matter how it came. Let's move on to Dixie here. Looking at the House, this was, again, not incredibly competitive. However, we did see the one Libertarian representative in the House. Poor Soren's got his work cut out for him. We can just run through quick here. Malcolm beat out now Governor Phoenix pretty soundly. Congresswoman Jess Reed fending off relatively weak challenges from both of the right-wing parties, Old Dominion and the Libertarians. Sorin beating out the incumbent, Kevin, and really the only loss for the left in the House side. Jeb, back from the dead, took a pretty strong win in District 4. Moongai, again, fighting off relatively weak challenges from the right. And then we have Drunk taking a relatively solid win after JMP, who is kind of known for coin tossing whether or not he shows up for elections, decided not to show up for an election. Anything there? Anybody jump in? Sandoval, this is your territory.
Sure, I can jump in. It is, again, it's interesting that the UL is such a strong showing here, and you kind of see a huge back and forth within Dixie just over the past, I would say, 6 months. It really seems like the right and the left battle over Dixie to the point where it's becoming sort of a swing state.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike the North, which I would say is heavy SDP territory. And Jefferson, I would say, is almost a GLP versus Libertarian. But in Dixie, I was not too surprised that Drunk won. I think he's a good candidate. But the House races, for sure, you saw a strong UL showing, and once again, the Libertarians didn't exactly pull through, except for Sorin, who, the lone man in the House now. I almost know how that feels, but I did have one friend last term. I'm wishing him the best of luck there.
either Rose or Josh, any thoughts here? Or we can talk about the presidential.
You know, I would happen to agree with Sandoval. I feel that the state of Dixie has just become a battleground state at this point. We've seen it flop back and forth between the past few elections. I think we will be seeing it go to the left a little bit more now that some prominent players in the Libertarian, such as Bo and President Sandoval, has now since the presidency, and they're no longer running in any races in Dixie. So I do think we'll start seeing more of a left trend that way, especially since the UL seems to be making a push in Dixie now. But I think that if the Libertarians really do keep some prominent members in Dixie, they might be able to hold on to that that stronghold that they hold there.
Mm-hmm. I'll also note that Dixie passed pretty overwhelmingly ranked choice voting for the next election, so we'll see that implemented soon, barring any changes. Last thing in Dixie, obviously this was the big driving force between the Sandoval Bow ticket, about a 25-point win over Not a Name, and Ryan Daly was trailing far behind. Obviously, you were the only one, Sandoval, to really spend in Dixie. Were you expecting a bigger margin? Did the margin not really matter since it is a winner-take-all state? How did you feel about your performance in Dixie?
I was expecting a bit of a larger margin, but as you saw, I was the only one who campaigned. I was governor of the state. And Bell was one of the senators. So obviously there is a huge home state advantage just for us off the bat, plus campaigning. And I think the fact that you didn't see, I predicted more of a 30-35% margin win over my opponent. And I think the fact that you didn't see that big of a margin points to the fact that the UL just has a larger presence there.
Sure.
Than seen before.
All right, let's talk Jefferson here. Rose's territory. We've got Putbai, who will never, ever leave that seat uncontested.
I hope not.
Yeah, he's... I think I said last time, that'll When I come out of retirement, maybe that'll be my job. I can head back to Jefferson. Give him a run for his money. Ombre makes his return, beating out Caprice in a pretty solid route. Sandra Mofi-Colbert, again uncontested, takes that seat. Rose beating out former Senator Disguised Jet. Sysadmin just beating down System, who is normally relatively strong in these races. And Bell Doll uncontested. Rose, like I said, this is your territory. Any thoughts on Global Labor's performance here over the overall result? What are you seeing?
Oh, I'm absolutely thrilled with my party. The showing that we had, again, I think that because the presidential race was so contentious between the left and the libertarians, that many people kind of just forgot about some of these other races and didn't show up to the debate. The constituency, I mean. Mm-hmm. So there wasn't a whole lot of activity in some of these debates, but even so, I knew what my party members were running on, and I'm proud to be able to say that we're, you know, Global Labor has now made a strong showing on two different occasions. In the last state elections, the only race that we lost there was mine against Kestrel. Mm-hmm. So I think the showing from the GLP is great. As far as the actual my own race, I mean to say, I was very disappointed in the former senator, kind of just seeming, I don't want to say falling asleep during the debate, but he did kind of just list away, you know, listlessly left the room or left the debate, and it left me feeling almost teased. I felt like that I had a really great race in this situation, and it didn't. I was excited about it, and then nothing happened. So I'm hoping that maybe someone next time around challenges me for that seat and gives me an actual race. But I'm still very, very proud of GLP. I'm very excited to see what we do in the House.
I so respect that feeling. I had a long string back when I was running the House of races that were borderline uncontested that seemed like I was having new members thrown at me. Not that the former senator is any kind of newcomer to the political realm, but I get that desire for a tough race. Let's put it that way.
I'll take a little bit of a narcissistic turn and say it must have just been because I was too intimidating. That's what
I would love to hear his thoughts on that, but unfortunately, he shot down my request to join tonight. It was. We're back through the rotating cast now. I think at one point I've had all three of you on, but we'll get there eventually. The presidential race, of course. Sandoval, you took another pretty decent run there, 56 to not a name's 38, and pushing you over the edge for taking the Electoral College. Puerto Rico. Josh, let's get you in here. The at-large district went to Layla. Butterlands made a return to the political world and did not make much of a splash. Obviously, you took two seats there. You had the state assembly race and then the beating out Libertarian Ian for the Senate. And then Rika went uncontested for the other Senate seat. How did you feel about your race? I guess races, but I'm not sure you fought too hard for the assembly one. And the picture of Puerto Rico as a whole. And I guess I'll ask specifically, were you surprised that Ian was able to get such a foothold with the Libertarians not having that much of a presence in the state?
Let me begin by saying I was very impressed with the SDP showout in Puerto Rico. Clearly, we've seen a lot of inactivity from the UL majority in the past, and I think voters clearly showed that they are not going to be okay with the status quo anymore, and they voted for an SDP majority out of all the seats. In terms of the percentage Ian got. I was surprised that he got much, frankly, given Puerto Rico's very leftist trend. However, we do hold a majority of voters in Puerto Rico, and we think that, and I think that my debate performance also pretty came through a little bit. In terms of, I was very surprised in the PR House election, for one, that Butterlin's, former President Butterlin's, didn't seem to put much effort to say into his race. And I was pretty surprised to see that Layla was able to take that pretty uncontested, which was nice to see, since we had so much tense elections in all the other states. Puerto Rico's kind of just the one that's, you know, left out of the tenseness, just some not as contentious races.
Sure. Talking about the presidency in Puerto Rico, this is another one, speaking of the unexpected libertarian strength. Sandoval, you came within 5 points of winning this one. I was stunned when that came through, even though it is winner-take-all. Do you think that the right has a place to build in Puerto Rico, or is that more of a one-off with your particular campaign?
I think that in the future we can clearly build a stronger political apparatus within Puerto Rico. Mm-hmm. And the 5% margin stunned my campaign as well. I didn't even count Puerto Rico in for my own projections, because it is one of two winner-take-all states. But yeah, I think that if I did even a little bit of campaigning in Puerto Rico, I could have taken every single state plus D.C.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said in my inaugural address, that the huge amount of votes that my campaign received that didn't all come from the right wing. I think it's because that the campaign had from a broad appeal to people across the political spectrum, and you definitely saw that within this election.
For sure. All right, so I'm just going to give a little overview of where we stand nationwide here. Obviously, libertarians are in control of the White House, Sandoval and Beau. For the Senate, we're looking at libertarian majority with Beau breaking that tie. Remains to be seen officially whether the cooperative caucus of the Libertarians and the SDP is going to hang together, though based on the PPT breakdown, I would assume not. It's looking like a 4-4 split there, with the four Libertarians hanging together. I'm sorry, as of recording now, the three Libertarians and Ethan Armstrong, who replaced Beau when he made his exit. And then on the other side, it would be Drunk, Josh, Epsilon, and Rico. In the House, very, very not right-wing picture. We've got three United Left, seven Social Democrats, four Global Labors, three left-leaning Independents, and Sorin. I want to pick at one thing here, and we're kind of through the show, so I don't want to keep this on too long for my little commentary analysis. If anyone needs to take off, you all have better things to do. But I want to pick at something that Josh mentioned during that Puerto Rico section, in that the United Left leadership there was kind of rejected in favor of the Social Democrats. Now, last session saw a little bit of a breakdown, as I mentioned, with the SDP flipping Libertarian, and I'm not suggesting that that's going to happen in the House. What I do want to ask is there any chance, and any of you are welcome to chime in on this, that with such an overwhelming majority on the left, we're going to start seeing some plays for control for one particular party over the others? Because just looking at the math here, I feel like it's worth pointing out the SDP and Global Labor could cut the United Left out of their caucus and still keep majority. The United Left and the Social Democrats could kick Global Labor out and keep the majority. The United Left and the Global Labor could pick up the left Independents and kick the Social Democrats out and keep majority. So historically, we've seen when these massive controls of one chamber land on one side, Usually that side can't handle the power, especially when it's in a coalition like this. So do any of you see moves starting to be made that could maybe tear apart this massive block of left-wing control that we're looking at?
Well, just as far as the Senate, I would defer to Senator Josh on that one. I haven't had too much conversation with Senator Epsilon in regards to their caucusing. We've had some articles that were posted. I think one of them was in 29. I can't remember which organization it is, but they are predicting us jockeying for the leadership roles of speaker and minority leader, since the assumption is that the SDP is going to take the majority seat or leader spot. I don't see that happening based just solely on the inter-party discussions, at least as far as within the previous previous Progress Caucus members that have been reelected to the House. There's a lot of push for me to possibly take up the role of Speaker again. The discussions, at least there, show a strong favor, or a strong showing in my favor. So at least as far as the speakership, I don't see many SDP members shifting away from that goal. And since I do have three fellow GLP members in the House with me, I don't think that the speakership role would be lost if I were to be nominated. But the minority and majority leader, that might be contested. I can't say one way or the other how it's going to go.
Do you have any insights into caucusing, not necessarily just for jockeying for positions?
That's just more inter-party discussions. We haven't fully determined exactly how the caucuses would play out. We've talked about letting Representative Soren have the minority caucus as a single individual. We've talked about splitting the members into two equal size caucuses so that we can share the majority minority leader roles. We've had lots of different discussions about it so far.
Okay. Josh, I'll kick it to you. I had Joey on here relatively recently, and he was expressing some concerns about that issue that I was discussing earlier, back during the whole gavel filibuster debacle. He was one of those who ended up flipping sides to kind of get the Senate back on track with Senator Drunk, who has now retained his seat. Where do you stand on how you plan to play out in the Senate? Do you see a return of the Cooperative Caucus, or is that an issue that was kind of pragmatic for the time of getting the Senate back to work, and that's done now, we're going back to our corners?
I think that we certainly did face a large issue last session involving the Senate, and I think that the American people wanted us to fix that issue as fast as possible. Now in this new session with the new layout, a 4-4 split of the Senate and Bo breaking the split there, I think what we're going to see is a lot of, me personally especially, I'll be probably sticking with the rest of my left members for the time being. Mm-hmm. Should there become another issue such as Gavelgate that splits the Senate or causes any distrust by the American people of the Senate, then I will have to reassess my positioning there. However, I think for now I'll be sticking with our left caucusing plan, and I'll be sticking with the SDP, UL, and GLP for now.
Okay. Have there been any discussions within the Senate left group as far as caucusing and leadership?
No, not right now. We are it's been pretty rough a ride with the election, so we're just kind of taking it one step at a time, and choosing our future steps wisely.
Fair enough. Sandoval, I'll come back to you. Have there been any conversations with the leadership in either branch or either chamber of Congress as far as how you plan on dealing with a divided government and getting your agenda through.
There obviously is plans between the leadership and the Senate. I think that the House is still up in the air. Like Speaker Rose said, it's like playing a puzzle. So many different pieces to make a different picture. So it's going to be interesting to see how it falls and who ends up on top. My prediction is that we will see Speaker Rose come back. And if that's the case, I have a lot more faith in the House and Congress as a whole. And I think that this term, if I can work with Speaker Rose and a Libertarian President pro tempore, along with Vice President Beau, I will be happy.
All right. I think that about does it for what I had planned. Does anyone want to have any final words before we wrap this up?
Well, thanks for the vote of confidence, President Thinwell. Just wanted to say that real quick.
Of course. I mean, it's great to have, you know, the president and the speaker that work together so often. And obviously, you and I both want someone we can work alongside. So
yes. Yeah.
I will say one final word, Cabin. Thank you for not trashing the White House before my arrival.
I mean, I didn't have a whole lot of time to mess things up, but, you know, I had it detailed before we wrapped up.
Great. Appreciate it.
All right, Josh, anything?
I'd just like to say thanks for having me on, and great job in the last session, and I wish you all the best in public life.
All right. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
I'd like to once again thank President Sandoval, Representative Rose, and Senator Josh for joining me today. Remember to subscribe wherever you listen to The Weekly so that you don't miss the latest episodes that bring you the latest news. The Weekly is a public record podcast.